Hello and welcome to the AT Tips Cast, exploring and investigating different implementation of assistive technology in public schools. I'm your host, Chris Bouguet. This is episode number 2, recorded on January 27th, 2008. How is assistive technology implemented in your school district? Federal law states that AT needs to be considered for every student with an individualized education plan, or IEP. It seems like different districts have taken different approaches to address assistive technology for their students. Obviously, I can't go into every situation in every public school district, but I thought maybe I could list a few of the service delivery models I've seen and weigh out some of the pros and cons of each model. First, let's start with the volunteer model. In some districts around the country, there aren't any part-time or full-time assistive technology personnel. The task of conducting evaluations or consulting about assistive technology falls on the shoulders of the speech-language pathologist, occupational therapist, and other staff members as an additional responsibility to their already heavy caseloads or workloads. I think in many cases, these people actually volunteer their time, and believe me, SLPs, which are speech-language pathologists, and OTs, occupational therapists, do not have much time available if they are already working in the public schools. These people probably volunteer because they see the need and because they know that there is no one else to do it. This model might work well for budgetary purposes and as a short-term approach, depending on the size of the district and the workloads of those related service personnel. That is, without a part-time or full-time AT person, the district is saving on the cost of funding that position. Inevitably, however, the workloads probably are going to prove too much, even for the most gung-ho speech therapist, occupational therapist, physical therapist, related service staff. Their workloads just are usually too high, and now you've added one more extra responsibility, and as a consequence, service delivery could start to suffer. So, second, there's the individual AT person model. Again, depending on the size of the district, one person might be the sole AT person for that district. This person probably has a full-time job and something like, a title like AT coordinator or AT specialist. The responsibilities of this one person are probably vast, including but not limited to conducting evaluations, writing up the evaluations like in a report. Buying equipment, trying to stay on top of new equipment, keeping up with technology and how fast it's growing, inventory equipment and maintenance, and then training on that equipment. They may or may not have a hand in setting policies and procedures, and they may or may not be a part of administration. This approach probably costs a bit more than having just volunteers, but the old saying is probably true in that you get what you pay for. At least the district has made some attempt in this case to put someone in charge of the situation and has made a commitment to the service as more than just a checkbox on an IEP that, yeah, we're looking at AT because we have these volunteers doing it. Here, at least they've put some commitment to it. Third, there's the combination of the two models that I previously mentioned. For example, there might be two part-time SLPs, one part-time OT, who in truth have a full-time position, but might have a lesser speech or OT caseload. Any combination might exist, including but not limited to, let's say, one part-time person in conjunction with one full-time person, or let's say, five part-time people and one full-time person. The combinations are just endless. Again, with this model, the district has demonstrated that they have some level of commitment to assistive technology as a service, and that it's not just, yep, we've made sure we did it because the federal law says we looked at it. Fourth, there's the full-time team approach. In this case, a team of individuals are established by the district to implement assistive technology services. Teams are probably multidisciplinary in nature, with individuals who bring different types of expertise to the team. In this model, the district has probably embraced assistive technology as a service that is more than just a band-aid to fix a problem, or just a checkbox to say, yes, federal government, we are looking at assistive technology, but the district in this case has usually embraced it and said that this service can really deeply impact a student or student lives. Fifth, there's the contract out approach. In districts where there are large geographic areas with relatively small populations for those areas, or for areas that have schools run by townships rather than counties, districts might contract out to a private agency to conduct private evaluations. Although private evaluations might be pricey, it probably still saves the district money when compared to at least one dedicated employee doing assistive technology. However, it's often hard to conduct an AT evaluation outside of a student's customary environment. Students react to different things in a center than in their own educational environment. Also, when a district contracts out, it runs the risk of having the company or organization that is conducting the evaluation be partnered with a specific company, limiting the options of what's available to students. Finally, a district that contracts out is probably just getting an evaluation and not the parts of what an individual or group of individuals could offer in terms of service delivery, such as follow-up, implementation strategies, staff development, and so on. So, those are just some models of how districts may have chosen to implement assistive technology services in their neck of the woods. I have to admit that I'm biased toward the team approach to addressing the question of assistive technology in a district. Individuals who get to build and then serve on an assistive technology team can be pioneers in the developing of a system of how things should operate with regard to assistive technology. The team approach shows a level of commitment by the district that assistive technology is important. If you have a different model of service delivery for assistive technology that I didn't mention, or if you match up with one of these models, I would love to hear about it. Please drop me a line at attipscast@gmail.com. There are no periods after the A or the T in the email address. It's just all one string of letters. attipscast@gmail.com. Now for the AT tip for Episode 2, using the sound record feature of Microsoft Word. Before using the sound record feature of Microsoft Word, make sure that you have your cursor placed in the exact location on the Word document where you want to insert the sound or narration. Then, up on the top toolbar of Microsoft Word, click Insert Object and a window will appear. Make sure that you've selected the Create New tab, and then under Object Type, scroll all the way down until you get to Wave Sound. Go ahead and scroll all the way down because it's going to be one of the last things to choose in that list. Then go ahead and select OK. The sound recorder will appear. It'll say Sound Object in Document Name up at the top of this new thing that pops up, this new window. Using a microphone that you've plugged into your computer, record your voice. Start by clicking on the record button, which is that red circle button, and when you're finished recording, click on the stop button, which is the rectangle button. Then go back to your Word document, and you'll see that a little icon has appeared that means, hey, you've recorded something. Go ahead and double-click on that icon, and you'll hear what you've recorded. If you don't like what you recorded, you can right-click on the icon and select delete, or you can highlight the icon and cut it or delete it that way as well. Using this strategy, teachers can record instructions so students can listen to those instructions over and over again. They could record test questions so students with reading difficulties can be actually quizzed or test on the test question and the content rather than their reading ability. Teachers can record reminders or helpful hints, such as, Johnny, don't forget to capitalize, if that's something that Johnny always forgets to do. Or teachers could record study tips, such as, okay, remember this one is Roy G. Biv, Roy G. Biv. We've been working on that all week. Don't forget that it's Roy G. Biv. In this way, you're giving a study tip that you've been working on or a mnemonic, but you're not really giving the answer to the student. Teachers could also record spelling tests and turn off the spell check of Microsoft Word for a student that is absent for a day, or better yet, have another student record the spelling test so that a teacher doesn't have to give it over and over and over again. The real power of this strategy, though, comes with what a student can do with it. Students could take this strategy and use it or apply it to content, quizzes, or tests. That is, picture a student with writing difficulties, and they're sitting in their science class, and the last test question of this science quiz or science test is an essay question. Well, the student with the writing difficulty might know the answer, but have difficulty actually physically writing that out. So maybe the teacher has made an accommodation where the student has to get up and go and talk to that teacher privately and explain the answer to the test. Well, this is an alternative way of doing it. The student could go to the computer, record their answer that way, orally or auditorily. The other thing it could be used for is for the student with who's struggling writer. Maybe this student gets hung up when they have trouble getting their thoughts down on paper. To talk to the student, they could tell you their story or they could tell you their essay, but it's getting their thoughts out, coordinating it, getting it out of their head, down onto the paper. So in this strategy could be useful there, where the student could have a graphic organizer, let's say a four-square model or some other model, where they have one cell represents each sentence. They could record their sentence in each cell on the Word document, and then they could go back and listen to each sentence and type it in as many times as they could listen to it as many times as they needed to get it typed in. This would also help the student that gets hung up on spelling mistakes. They get to a word, they're not sure how it's spelled, or the red little squiggly line shows up that says you spelled something incorrectly, and that throws them. They can't remember what they were going to write after they saw that they spelled something wrong. They just have to fix it. They can't wait to do the spelling at the end, and for that reason, they can't continue the writing process, or it slows them down, or they forget what they're going to write, what they wanted to write. Here they could go back and listen to what they wanted to write over and over and over again. Also, teachers could learn to accept at the beginning of the year, let's say, that a student is going to only get one sentence typed, and the next four sentences are going to be done auditorily. And then as the year progresses, the teacher starts to up the ante where the student is expected to type more and more of the sentences. I hope you found this AT tip helpful. That about wraps it up for this episode. If you have any topics for episodes that you would like for me to discuss, or if you have questions or really anything at all, please email me at attipscast@gmail.com. You can also access the compendium blog for the AT Tipscast by going to attipscast.wordpress.com. Until next time, may all your interventions be inclusive, and may all your strategies be supportive.